And I want to remind you now, we're going to continue our series here on the Mark Steiner Show, reflecting on the Baltimore uprising, which took place a year ago this month. One of the big topics of discussion in the wake of the 2015 uprising was how similar and different it was than the 1968 rebellions that took place in Baltimore after the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King. Mark Steiner Show, our producer Mark Gunnery, sat down to interview philosopher Dr. Robert Burt, author of The Liberatory Thought of Martin Luther King Jr., Critical Essays in Philosopher King, who's also an assistant professor of philosophy at Bowie State University, to his memories of that moment in 1968 when he was growing up in Latrobe Homes. Here's that story.
I remember, like it was yesterday, that King was murdered, was assassinated on a Thursday. April 4th, 68 was a Thursday. Nothing big at least happened on Thursday. Or Friday. But sometime in the afternoon on Saturday, the situation exploded. I'm told that it began in my neighborhood in the area of Gay Street. It later came to be called Old Town Mall. And I was happened to have been on Eager and Asquith Street when I saw at least the first of it that I saw. Where, you know, some young men were chanting that they killed King, so we're going to burn the dirty so-and-sos out. Mm-hmm. They started attacking the property of the white store owner, and it proceeded down Eager Street, and before the day was out, a sizable part of the city erupted. A little different from what happened last year, is that it apparently started in East Baltimore, which is where I live, and eventually spread into West Baltimore as well. Sort of the reverse of what happened, you know, in that sense. However, I think for very similar reasons. The economic deprivation, of course, structural racism hasn't changed. The continual agitations of police brutality, but with an interesting difference. The economic, for example, exploitation of the poor, happened under mainly white administrations and when I was a kid, at least locally. The same economic injustices happened under the supervision of a sort of black political elite. Mm-hmm. In a sense, it's the same people, though. I mean, basically, there's an economic elite, which is still mainly white, of course, but the administrative part of it and much of the police are now black. Usually when you encounter the police, and you didn't want to if you didn't have to. When I was coming up, they were white. We also at times had foot patrols, right? So you had the sense of being under pressure from a kind of white occupation army. It's interesting if you consider the current situation where Freddie Gray was murdered. Half the policemen involved were white and half were black, which sort of goes to show that the system is the system is the system. You can change the color, at least of the visible personnel. The economic personnel remains the same anyway. But the system is still the system. It still operates that way. What's now a problem, though, is I think in a very real sense, the community in which I grew up is probably in some respects more impoverished than it was before. The city has a greater degree of blight. I think the economic division between haves and have-nots is probably greater, but it's camouflaged to a certain extent by the replacing in the political sphere of a largely black political class. Mm-hmm. But other than that, it's kind of like neocolonialism. The system pretty much operates as before. Mm-hmm. And for the majority of the people, it hasn't gotten better. In fact, to a certain extent, it's probably gotten worse.
What do you think it's going to take to have real systemic change in Baltimore and in the United States?
The same as always, strong, militant, popular movements for social justice. And I'm not even talking about, let's say, maybe something like the Bernie Sanders campaign. I'm talking about a radical social movement of social transformation that may indeed involve itself in the political process, but will not be rooted in the state. It will be rooted in communities.
Did you see glimmers of that during the uprising of last year and the aftermath?
Well, of course, you began seeing a number of, you know, and I was at some of them. You began seeing a number of meetings and people coming together in churches and schools and civic places. And a number of organizations sort of began making their presence felt. Probably Black Lives Matter was, I think, probably had already put in a presence. So they become a bit more visible after this. We're probably in early formative stage of new movements. Given the state of things, they couldn't come too soon. Especially if we end up with this right-wing nut as a president. It'll do you, Don Trump.
What do you think that people from your generation who have been politically and socially active could pass on to the younger generation that is coming up now in Baltimore, particularly around that kind of like developing militant politics? What are some of the lessons from the past that could be applied right now?
Well, one thing I think is very interesting, an answer given to by Angela Davis to some of the students in my university was saying, well, what do we do? We don't have, you know, all the things. King isn't around anymore and this, that, and the other thing. And Angela Davis says, trust yourself. You decide to commit to social change. And as the historical moment develops, which become favorable with social change, if you are prepared to take the opportunity, you can become and embody the new a new movement for social freedom and social liberation. I think young people should remember whatever glorified picture we have of the 60s, that people had to a certain extent, figure their way around, find things out, make their mistakes, and discover things, and to invent things. The younger generation will both do and not do what we did. What they will have to do is well, again, you have to engage yourself. You have to examine the situation. You have to learn through practice how to form community, how to form resistance. What they could learn, and that's perhaps what hopefully we can offer, is from our mistakes. That you don't want to repeat. New movements, it seems, are not as leader-centered as some of the movements were. I mean, I have a lot of admiration for Martin Luther King, Malcolm, or anyone else. But a lot of movements sometimes can become too leader-centered. That stifles the democratic initiative of the average person. And in some cases can make the movement so dependent upon the leader that when the establishment removes the leader, the movement may be thrown into chaos. Probably today, just to think of if we want to consider the Black movement, and I'm not suggesting any kind of model, but probably movements today probably should look more like, say, SNCC than maybe SLC, and certainly more so than NAACP or anything like that. This emphasis on grassroots and also building popular initiatives, popular institutions. SNCC had freedom schools. The Panthers had their programs, political education, grassroots activities, which enable ordinary people to empower themselves. Charismatic leaders, they can come and go, and if they do well and they're good for the movement, good. But you shouldn't depend on it. You shouldn't. It shouldn't be a question of if Moses isn't there, you can't get to the promised land. It should never be like that.
And you're in academia. How do you think that academics, and in particular Black academics, should be responding to the social movements that are happening now, how they should be engaging with them?
Well, considering that much of the new initiative is coming from young people, including some of our students, one is to encourage them, to support them, to put at their disposal whatever wealth of information or experience or knowledge that we have, but leave it to them to figure out how to use it, what they can use, what they can't use, and how they can use it. I think we should be supportive and even involved where we can in such movements. But I think we should also be thinking in terms of passing the mantle on, right? To pass the legacy on so that the youth can continue their forward movement to transform society and to transform themselves.
That was Dr. Robert Burt, the author of Liberatory Thought of Martin Luther King Jr., critical essays on the philosopher King. who's also an assistant professor of philosophy at Bowie State University. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Gunnery. Our engineers, Andre Melton. Our interns are Sienna Greaves, Morgan Barber, Manifa Wilson, and Calvin Perry. Our theme music is by Juan Matthews of Clean Cuts. Send me your thoughts about today's program to talk@steinershow.org. To podcast The Mark Steiner Show and share it with your friends, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. Or listen to us via your favorite podcasting app. And your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.
Now we're the man's a chance to do things for ourselves. We're tired of beating our head against the wall and working with someone.